on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard to another episode of The Big Fish. The results are in from the great Winburndale Trout Muster, Season 2 in the Central West, to help re-establish the Macquarie Perch in the Macquarie River. We're going to take you to the south coast of New South Wales and beyond to share one of the biggest fishing secret spots ever. Stinker's back with another tale of a big fish that didn't get away, and our first cast this morning, the fishing fad, or fish-attracting device, on the mid-north coast that has a Central Coast small boat fisher foaming at the mouth. All coming up on The Big Fish. Were you into fads when you were a kid? I must say, yo-yos, flared pants, hula hoops, dingbats. Remember dingbats? Fidget spinners of late, hacky sacks, pet rocks. When I was a kid particularly, right into fads. Well, mahi-mahi are right into fads too. And boy, they're fun when you find them at the fad. And Chris Franklin has done that. He's a small boat fisher and school teacher who loves bringing fishing into the classroom. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Yeah, going well. It's obviously our listeners would remember you using fishing as a teaching tool and as a tool to bring the school community together, which was so successful with your Fish Vember project. But you also like to wet a line yourself, and you found the fads going off. Where were they?
That's right. It was not long ago, probably 6 weeks ago now. It seems a long time ago. Now we're in the depths of winter. But off Foster, I've got a little bolt hole up at Foster to get to, and I managed to get up there just after Easter.
They were on in numbers, were they?
They were everywhere. It's one of those times where you go out, and it's always the trip of the fad, good 40-minute run out to not know what's going to be there. But got there, they were free jumping. You could see them in the water, and it's just one of those days where you know it's going to be good.
The video and the images you've sent just paint a picture-perfect day. And the fads off the Central Coast in Sydney are a bit further out than that. They're a bit of a haul, and you really can't do it in a small boat if the weather's not good. But you got some cracking weather.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's hit and miss down on the Central Coast where we live. And I do get out once or twice a year, but I eclipsed that at Easter. It was just one of those weather windows that you wish for. It was no wind. There was no swell, and so you could run in and out really quickly. I ran out at full throttle as though you're running inside, and it was just amazing to get a day like that, and then it ended up getting a week like that. So I would never complain.
Although you did get a bit bored after a while, did you?
Yeah, I know. You wouldn't think you would you? But after about 4 days of running out and, yeah, catching mahi after mahi, I thought I just need a change. So I went off after the snapper, went north to the reefs and picked up a few snapper, but the action wasn't quite as fast as it was out on the fad.
Anything other than the mahi-mahi on that Foster fad?
There's a couple. I didn't get them, but there's a couple of wahoo around. I saw some divers who were out there, and they said they actually speared one, and they said there was a couple of them around. I had one, I think, on my first one, so got a hit, clean cut through the line, so I assume it was either Spanish mackerel or wahoo, but I only caught the mahi those days that I was out there.
Wonderful stuff. What a great fish. And you take your hat off to those spearos who jump over the side that far offshore and then swim around those fish-attracting devices looking for pelagic fish to shoot. There are some very, very big fish that eat small fish out there. Those spearos are fearless, I reckon.
Oh, they are. You wouldn't see me. In fact, I did catch one other thing out there, and it was a small shark. So they were out there.
There you go.
But, yeah, I stay in the boat, Scott. There's no way I'm going overboard when I'm 20 k's out to sea.
Not at all, not at all. Chris Franklin is with us on The Big Fish, talking about fun at the fads with the mahi-mahi, the fastest-growing fish in the sea, too. The research coming out of Florida, and there are oceanic species all around the world, is that they grow incredibly quickly, that in a year or so they can be to good size. But they're funny, aren't they? You get the females that are smaller, and you get the big bull has a harem. Did you see any of the big hump-headed bulls?
I didn't get any bulls. They were all the cows that I got, but they were a good size. And I guess because it was April, they've had all summer to grow. And as you say, they grow astronomically fast. I'm pulling numbers out of the air here, but I think it's about an inch a week, about two to 2.5 centimetres a week they grow. So they're all good size. So everything I caught was between 85 and 95 centimetres. So that's still a good size fish. The bulls, I can't imagine how big they would have been out there.
Yeah, well, they go well over 10 kilo, don't they? They get to stonking size. They're quite a thin fish, very acrobatic fish too. They're really quick and zippy, and the colour changes. They're really quite spectacular, and they're very nice to eat. So they've got it all, really, the mahi-mahi, haven't they?
They have. That's the thing. The colours, and they're all different colours, and depending on the fight, some come in bright gold when they're exhausted, others will come in silver and blue, and even just when they're swimming through the water, you can see the colours on them. So it's an incredible fish to get. They're a beautiful fish to look at, and as you say, they're excellent on the plate. They're one of the best fish you'll get on the plate.
Yeah. Take us through your techniques at the FAD.
It's basically the same I would do for kingfish. So it's always a run to the bait ground first to pick up some liveys. And I was able to get slimy mackerel, which was good, a few yellowtail, but mainly slimy mackerel. And they were good size, so it sort of kept the little dollies away. But once I've got a bait tank full, I just run out to the FAD, and then it's a slow troll over with a bridled slimy and feed it back once you feel the weight, and off you go. Set that hook.
Right. And when we do that for the kingies, you tend to use a sort of a poor man's downrigger, don't you? A big lead, not too big, so it doesn't really get in the way of fighting the fish, but a decent-sized ball sinker, about as big as ball sinkers get, and have it down a bit. Is that the case with the mahi-mahi, or are they more on the top?
Yeah, that was the same. I still just slow troll it with that weight on there. I go up and down in weight sometimes. I just find the fish swim a bit better when you've got a little bit of weight on there. If you've got nothing, they tend to hang on the top a bit more and often drown as well.
And fast and furious action?
Oh, yeah. Like, as soon as you get the line over, you're only waiting less than a minute before you've got one generally, and then it's getting it in and then re-rigging and going again. So, yeah, it was a couple of hours of fun every time you're out there.
They can be a bit finicky sometimes, but it seems like the live bait is the secret. They can be sort of chasey but not bitey sometimes on lures.
Absolutely, and I saw that when I was out there because, as you can imagine with the FAD, it doesn't just attract fish, it attracts fishermen as well. So there's plenty of boats out there. But a couple of them were out there, they didn't have live baits and they were flogging the water white with lures and getting nothing. And the ones they did get were generally the small ones. So the live bait, I always find, is what makes the difference. But the other secret I find is don't get too close to the FAD. The bigger ones seem to hang further out.
Now, there's a good tip from Chris Franklin. And the Foster FAD is one of many, isn't it? So everyone listening to us up and down the coast of New South Wales probably has one somewhere out to sea. And even if you don't have one, if you see any debris at all coming down in the East Coast Current, an old bit of palm frond or a tree or something, that's your signal to go and have a couple of casts.
That's it. And stay wide of it first and work your way in. You don't want to be spooking them. But the FADs, I think they've all been pulled by fisheries now for the year, so they'll bring them in and clean them, and then they'll go back out again in spring. So those fish will probably move back up north, I'd imagine, now with the warmer water.
And I don't know what type we have in most places, but mostly they're just a big boy. But sometimes that can be very elaborate with solar-powered pumps that shoot water to create spray to get the fish to shelter underneath and so on and so forth.
Yeah, our ones are just the fisheries ones they put out are generally just a big yellow buoy. It looks like a mooring buoy that you would have a yacht on in a harbour, probably a little bit bigger than that. But that's all it takes. You just need something for those bait fish to gather under in the middle of nowhere, and that brings the pelagics around after them.
And you just key in the GPS?
Exactly. And you can find that on the internet. The fisheries do publish when they put them out what the coordinates are. So once you've got that keyed into the GPS, out you go, and you find it pretty easy.
Tell you what, we've had some warm currents. Did that mean there were more of them, do you think?
I think that would have been part of it. The water was about 25 degrees when I was up there at Easter, so I don't know what it's sitting at now. But, yeah, that's 25, that's pretty warm, so that's why you're getting those pelagic species down there.
And we're not talking about a giant boat in your boat, are we? It's one that you probably wouldn't take 20 k's out unless it was really good weather.
Exactly. So I've got a 4.95-metre runabout, and it's more than enough to get out there on a good day. It's okay if there's a bit of swell, but I would never go out without checking what the conditions are first. I only go out in the decent conditions. If it's coming up in the day, I wouldn't be out there. And an example, yesterday we had gale force winds come through the east coast of New South Wales. There's no way I'd be getting out there with that predicted, even though it was no wind at all in the morning.
Check that weather and always jump onto Marine Rescue and log on and log off, and hopefully you make it back. Thanks so much for sharing your adventure, Chris. It's not a fad. It's here to stay, and they'll be back out next summer.
Yeah, just got to wait to the end of the year again now, but it's usually sort of February onwards that they come on up there. So, yeah, a little bit of a wait, but one thing is I know they will be back.
You never know. The big kings might start to move in closer to shore now, so that could be the next target species.
One can only hope, or maybe we get out after some mulloway too, Scotty.
Oh, it sounds like a plan. Thank you, Chris Franklin.
All right. Thanks, Scotty. Have a good day.
The Big Fish on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and as you've heard on this program, one of the biggest things to ever happen in recreational fishing in Victoria, just across the border from New South Wales, and it'll be a mecca for travelling New South Wales, New South Welsh women and men, is the Gippsland Lakes becoming a recreational fishing haven. Travis Dowling is the CEO of the Victorian Fisheries Authority with an update on that groundbreaking move. Good morning, Travis.
Oh, good morning, Scott. It is always a pleasure to join you and your mad keen fishier listeners. Great to be on The Big Fish.
All roads lead to that place. Now, it's been a while now since the nets were taken out and it became a sustainable recreational fishery. How long has it been and what's happened since we last spoke about it? It was a germ of an idea when we spoke about it before after lots of consultation.
Well, absolutely. Look, it was a 2018 election commitment by the government in Victoria to remove the nets. They came out in, really, we got them out pretty quick. They came out in 2019 and there were 10 netters left in the Gippsland Lakes. It cost on average $1 million per licence, so we paid over $10 million to transition the netting out of Gippsland. People knew there would be recovery of the lakes. They knew that once the netters came out and those fish were left in, that we'd see recovery. What nobody knew was how quick that recovery would be, and it's been incredible. So you speak to anyone in Lakes Entrance, they were a bit apprehensive about what would happen when netting was removed from the Gippsland Lakes. If you walk down the main street in Lakes Entrance now, if you go to Meetung, if you go to Painesville, you go to anywhere, they will tell you the shops are full, the caravan parks are full, the motels are full, the boat ramps are full, and people are absolutely having a ball because the lakes are back. And we've been astounded by what we're seeing coming out of the Gippsland Lakes and how they're recovering. So it's a great story.
It's very similar to what happened at Lake Macquarie when it became a recreational fishing haven. People saw things that they hadn't seen in generations. Is that what we're getting now? Are we seeing some amazing captures?
Oh, absolutely. So people always thought the Gippsland Lakes were a good fishery historically for dusky flathead and black bream. They were generally the target species. Subsequent to the netting coming out, though, in 2019, Scott, what we've seen is a fishery that is almost unparalleled in Victoria for King George whiting. So it's been amazing, the King George whiting fishing, and most of the structures around the Gippsland Lakes have got mussels growing on those structures, and people are just going using the back end of the filleting knot to knock some mussels off, opening those mussels up as free bait and fishing any of the channels and catching big whiting, like 40 centimetre plus whiting. And that fishery, which sort of emerged in about 2020, has been going strong all the way through all of the seasons, all year in the Gippsland Lake. So we're seeing the recovery of a whiting fishery we didn't know exist. We're seeing return of black bream numbers. And we've just started stocking dusky flathead in there as well, which is going to be incredible in the coming years across the Gippsland Lakes.
How many have you released, and why didn't you stock them while the commercial nets were in there?
Oh, look, yeah, and I'll just give a shout-out, Scott, to all of the recreational fishers who helped us capture the broodstock for the dusky flathead. So we took broodstock from Lake Tyres and Mallacoota, and we took them up to Naruma to breed them, and we've bred and released 47,000 dusky flathead back into the Gippsland Lakes. And It's a good question why we weren't doing this while it was netting, but it comes down to a bit of a logical question. We didn't want to be using recreational fishing license money to stock these inlets with species that would then be netted and then be removed. So we're quite lucky. Now that netting has transitioned out of these lakes, we can stock them with a dusky flathead, and we're going to provide that incredible opportunity to catch up to hopefully 1 metre dusky flathead into the future. But look, it's just wonderful for the town. It's wonderful for East Gippsland. It's great to see the recovery of the Gippsland Lake. You couple that, Scott, with Lake Tyres, which is an iconic fishery now. It also has a booming estuary perch population, and we're starting to see mulloway caught in there. And you couple that with Cairn River and Bem River and Mallacoota, and really East Gippsland's become, I would say, the mecca for estuary fishing anywhere in Australia.
Mallacoota is just phenomenal, and I guess that experiment would have dictated to you that this works.
Yeah, and really it's just a no-brainer. If you're leaving 300 to 400 to 500 tonnes of breeding fish in a system that is often closed, and so the fish are quite resident in there, if you're leaving those in there annually and allowing them to breed, and also making them available for recreational fishers to catch, you're going to see significant, huge differences in your fishing experience, and also the health and the environmental benefits to those systems. So that's what we're seeing now. We don't have any netting in any of the East Gippsland estuaries, and what we've really are witnessing are fisheries that people used to talk about in the sort of 30s, 40s and 50s, going back, you know, 70 or 80 years, that people are now replicating some of those stories in terms of the experiences they're having when they're fishing. And, there's 7 million people now in Victoria, and it's wonderful to be able to provide those opportunities where people don't have to jump on a plane and don't have to travel too far to have a fishing experience of a lifetime.
Travis Dowling is the CEO of the Victorian Fisheries Authority. And Travis, for travelling anglers, particularly it's very close for our listeners on the south coast, what do you need to do? What do you need to take? I mean, how accessible is it? What size boat would work well on the Gippsland Lakes to catch those phenomenal King George Whiting, those beautiful big flathead black brim? How are the mulloway going?
Oh, yeah, and all fantastic, fantastic points. And look, one of the beauties of these estuarine systems is you can easily get by on it with a tinny and a small outboard. So, look, you know, the boat that I fish with is a 3.9-metre Stacer, and I've got a 25-horsepower motor on the back of it, so not big at all. Perfect for these estuaries where you can get in and sort of 3 to 4 foot of water, and you can target big dusky flathead on the flats, or you can get in onto the brim. So you don't need big boats, but you can also, because of the nature of the waterways, you can have big boats. So if your boat's a bit larger and it's got some bigger horsepower motors on it, that's okay as well, because the systems are quite large and they're deep in many places. So they're really open to anyone who's into fishing. Doesn't matter the size of your boat. And there's a lot of people that are using Hobies and kayaks now as well. But the other thing, and you've touched on it, is the excitement of a mulloway. And I sort of think of mulloway, I compare them to a 1 metre long Murray cod or a 1 metre long barramundi. They're that iconic estuarine species. We were fortunate enough to stock 5,000 of them into Lake Tyres. We have seen some recent captures where they're about 70 to 80 centimetres now in Lake Tyres. We want to put a lot more effort into that because, again, having these fishing havens all along the East Gippsland estuarine system means that we know that we can stock them in there and we're going to get a return on those fish. And if you're there dangling a prawn in or you're flicking a soft plastic after a brim or a flatty and a 1 metre mulloway grabs it, you're never going to forget that. So we're hoping to create those experiences.
Does it upset you that those mulloway, of course, swim out of the Gippsland Lakes and those other protected places where they grow to the big size? And Lake Macquarie is full of them at the moment too because they're not netted anymore, and then swim north to the beaches of the south coast where anglers are tangling with them, and sadly sometimes netters are getting them as well. Does the government in Victoria know that you're making that contribution over the border?
Well, Well, I suppose it's, well, I mean, we don't mind sharing, and it's okay. Like, we do know fish will, they'll move around. Look, people's perception of how we should manage our bathe inlets is changing a lot. And, you know, hopefully at some point in the future, we're all going to be on the same page in terms of the values that these recreational fisheries provide in the bathe inlets. And, look, the mulloway that we've seen in late tides when they've been stocked, they've hung around. So whilst, you know, when the system, we've had a couple of years of openings because of the rain, and certainly there's been the opportunity for them to head out and to go for a holiday along the coast. But what we're seeing with the catches in the system is that there's plenty of food there, and they're not keen to travel anywhere in a big hurry. So that's a real benefit for us and for people that are fishing late tides particularly.
What do we know about their breeding habits? Do we know enough about where they go to protect them when they're breeding? Because it's crazy to kill your brood stock. Any farmer would know you don't kill the prize bull.
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually. And we're doing a little bit of research at the moment about, we're doing some research on kingfish. We're doing some further research on Murray cod. I know that I've got a friend up in Queensland. They're doing a lot of research on Spanish mackerel. So I think that's a really good question, and probably one that we should look into further, because if it can help us in terms of lining up our management arrangements to protect these fish when they're most vulnerable, then we've got size and bag limits in place, we've got gear limits in place, but understanding their breeding and their movement, you know, that would certainly be something that would be another tool in our kit box of managing what is just a beautiful fish and making sure that we've got these fish for the future for our kids to catch.
There was outrage at Eden when a whole school of great big mulloway that people assume were all together to breed was, they shot a net around them and took them. Even the good pros were outraged by that, but it was legal at the time. Maybe that won't happen if you crack the code and share that science with the New South Wales fisheries.
Yeah, I always find it a little bit sad when you see that. You know, a few individuals taking tons of fish that could be enjoyed by thousands and thousands of individuals. I remember being up in the Northern Territory a number of years ago, and the black jewfish population up there, which is a very close friend of the mulloway from the southern states, they're very careful in how they fish that fishery from a commercial point of view, because they can so easily be overfished. They're a long-living species who grow quite large, and you know, a 30 to 40 pound mulloway can feed a family for a week. So you don't need too many of these fish to be able to really sustain people. And yeah, I think that there is a great opportunity there, Scott, for some further research and further understanding of what is an iconic fish.
Your template of sustainability being the bottom line, whether it's recreational or commercial fishing, I think is one that many across the border look at with envious eyes. So the Gippsland Lakes, are New South Wales fishers welcome? Are people from the south coast and further north welcome?
Look, to all of your listeners, we would love nothing more than some New South Welshers to come down to Victoria. Come and enjoy our fisheries. I'm going to insist that you put on a Collingwood scarf when you come down.
Oh, no!
No, come down and enjoy East Gippsland. It is a beautiful part of Australia, and we love having you down. And bring your partner down, bring your mates down, grab a beer at the pub, have a glass of wine, throw a line in the water, enjoy the fishery, and hopefully take back to New South Wales some wonderful memories.
I didn't see that Collingwood checkpoint at the border last time I was down on the south coast, but the Swans aren't doing too well, so maybe we'll all go as pies and be welcomed by Victorian fisheries. Travis Dowling, thanks so much for the update on the Gippsland Lakes. It sounds incredible. And boy, you've done a lot for tourism in this spot. Visiting anglers, of course, the number one recreational pastime in New South Wales as well as Victoria. And I think they'll be down there in droves. I'm glad this show doesn't go south of the border.
Always a pleasure, Scott. Good luck with your fishing, everyone.
Thanks, Travis Dowling, the CEO of Victorian Fisheries Authority, with some great news about Gippsland Lakes bouncing back after the nets were taken out.
Jump.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinker, you've been a tour guide for an old uni buddy from Western Australia who's a great bloke by the sound of it.
Oh, yes, well, that's right, Scott. We don't get to see... My wife and I spent 3 years in Perth, Western Australia. I went to university in the University of Western Australia. Fantastic over there. And we lived at Cottesloe Beach in a little flat. And I remember it cost us $20 a week.
What a great place, too. It's a lovely, lovely place. The water's so blue there with that limestone sand, isn't it? It's just gorgeous.
Yes, well, we made a lot of friends when we were in Perth, and we get to see some of them. But it's such a long way. It's a long way over there. And, you know, you don't always get the opportunity. But once a year, my friend comes over, and he loves the water and he loves fishing, so I try to organise as many things that we can have a good time.
That's a way. Well, you've got something in common there, that you love fishing, and you went into education and as a sportsmaster, and he went into becoming a medical doctor, a general practitioner. Is that right?
Yeah, and he's been there. He just received a community award in Bunbury in Western Australia for his services to that community, which is a great achievement for medicos. Don't like going to the bush much these days. They like to stay in the cities.
Well done, Dr. John Glidden. He deserved that beautiful big snapper. You've sent me a photo of that. I'll put it up on our Big Fish page and our Facebook page as well, and publish it with the podcast. And Stinker, you've not only caught some good fish with your mate, but you've inspired one of our listeners. Simon Fairbanks jumped onto the Big Fish Facebook group and published a fantastic photo. He writes, "Took Stinker's advice about great snapper conditions this morning and went for our first snapper fish in Balambi. This 68-centimetre fish was the biggest of a good haul, and there he is holding a beautiful snapper that he's jigged up off Balambi Point, off Wollongong, that is, isn't it?"
Yes, it is. Well, that's good. I'm so pleased for him. I mean, the normal rule of thumb is, of course, after a really big sea, you get out as quickly as you possibly can when the sea dies down, because the fish have been knocked around a bit and they've probably gone into deep water and haven't been able to feed. But when they can get in closer and onto those more shallow reefs, oh, gee, they're raring to go. And so, good, well done to that. That's great news. But, I must tell you about last Tuesday, Scott. I had the most fantastic day. I had mentioned to a couple of people around the place that my friend had arrived and we were looking for things to do. And, I had considered going up to Broughton Island. And then one of the commercial fishermen said, well, you know, what about we go up to Tamboy? Now, I don't know whether you know much about Tamboy, but Tamboy, it's T-A-M-B-O-I, or some people spell it T-A-M-B-O-Y. But what it is, it's a little fishing village of actually squatters, just shacks. And there are six or seven shacks way up the Myall River, where the Myall River flows into the Myall Lakes at the Broads, which is the first lake in the Myall system. So to go from Nelson Bay, we jumped on the boat with the commercial fisherman, Glennie Tarrant, and he's been up there more than any person in Nelson Bay, and so he knows exactly every tree. And so off we go from Little Beach. We go across the port, just the three of us, and then we go underneath the Singing Bridge, which separates Tea Gardens to Hawk's Nest.
Was it doing a tune for you at the time?
No, couldn't pick up a song, no. But then we went from Tea Gardens, you go from there to into the Myall River, and then you wind your way up into the lake system, and the ride is fantastic. So when we got up there, we moored the boat, jumped ashore, and walked around the little village. And there used to be a post office there, Scott.
Really?
I've sort of delved into the history a little bit, and I think it really, all that sort of thing started around about 1920, when the commercial fishermen who wanted to net those prawns would have to go up there, and there was a raffle, basically a raffle, on the full moon. That's once a month, every month. And what you would do, if your name came out, you would then get the what they call a top shot or the best shot at the prawns as they left the lakes and come down through the river system. It's not all that complicated, but all the fishermen play by the rules and so that everybody can get their fair share of the prawns. But it's a very sustainable business too, because the amount of prawns coming down the system now is equal to it has been for years and years. So that's a good thing. So we stayed up there and just enjoyed the whole environment, the birds and the swans and all the seabirds and the hawks and the sea eagles. It's just magnificent.
It's lovely, lush bush, isn't it? It's very primordial through there with the palm groves and the paperbark swamps and things. It's really a lovely sort of temperate forest. And I guess going up, I went up in the nighttime, but going up by daytime, you get to see all of that right down to the bank of the river.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, my friend, his jaw hit the ground. He said, how beautiful is this? And it was, because it was a perfect day. So it was like just skating on ice. It was so flat. But then we came home, had some lunch, and then I looked at the chart and I think, here we go. We've got a bit of a southerly wind blowing. There is a bit of a swell. The tide is dropping. There'll be pretty much low tide on sundown. So I said, we'll go out and see if we can catch a snapper. So we loaded up, jumped in Stink Pot, just the two of us in Stink Pot, put our life jackets on, and off we went. And I anchored maybe 30 metres short of the break with the southerly, bit of a sou'wester actually, blowing at my back. And then we both threw out with a cube of yellowtail. Gee, I tell you what. And then we got hit just about immediately. And I said, here we go. But the rods were buckling over. And I said, we're in for a picnic here. And there were two salmon. Oh, gee. Yeah. I mean, I try my hardest to avoid the kingfish. And then the salmon turn up. And they're not my favourites either. When you're targeting snapper, you don't want kingfish or salmon hanging around. Anyway, the salmon wouldn't leave us alone. But, and this is what made me so pleased, and then my friend, his rod just buckled over and squealed. And I said, this is no salmon. This is a really good fish. And it went straight over the reef, straight over it, straight through the white water and onto the other side of the reef. And I'm thinking, oh, this is, you know, to pull it back over the top of the reef is not going to be an easy thing. But he kept winding and grinding. And then he got it down into deep water and it come up and rolled on its side. And when that happens and you see that it's a big snapper, this one was closer to 6 kilo, it was just an absolutely beautiful fish. And so when we got that in the boat, well, everything else didn't really matter much.
Happy days, happy days. And a great memory to take back to Bunbury, Stinker.
Well, I'll send you an email and you can put it up on the site if you wish. But, oh, gee, to be able to, and I'm blessed, I reckon, because I can launch Stink Pot, which takes me 5 minutes. I've got to drive 150 metres, and I can launch Stink Pot. Then I go for another 1.5 kilometres, which might take me another 10 or 15 minutes, drop the anchor and catch snapper to 6 kilo. I mean, oh, gee, well, we'll come home and have a big feast, have a few beers, watch the footy, and happy days.
That snapper has a very pronounced hump, that regal bump on the head. What's your theory? What's the theory there? Because the one that the bloke caught down at Bulambi Point off Wollongong, which is a fish of a similar proportions, a very big fish, doesn't really have that pronounced bump. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know, because the biggest snapper I have ever seen never had a hump. I've seen them 12 and 15 kilo without a hump, not even the slightest bump. So what the bump's all about, I'm not real sure. But if someone else comes up with a theory, I'm willing to listen, but I can't tell you, because to tell you the truth, I don't know.
Well, there's a question for our Big Fish listeners, Stinker. They can send you an email, stinkerfishing@yahoo.com, or send it to us, thebigfish@your.abc.net.au. Why do some snapper have a great big hump on the head and others don't? It's a mystery that's even stumped Stinker.
I always was led to believe that it was the old ones get the hump. Well, that's not the case. That is not the case. So there's another reason. And I've also heard that they use the hump to bash shellfish off the rocks. Well, I'm not too sure about that either. So, why does some have a hump and some don't? I'd be interesting to find out.
We've been stumped by the hump question, and see if our listeners...
by the hump.
Maybe
that's right.
Dave Horasty, the great scientist in your backyard there at Port Stephens, can work it out. Maybe someone can let us know. Stinker, tight lines, mate. Great that you were able to look after your old mate from WA.
Hooray, Scott.
On the Big Fish last weekend, you heard all about the Winburndale Trout Muster Season 2 to catch the big trout out of a protected water supply dam where fishing for them is banned, and to transport those fish to a fishery where you can catch them at Portland, just outside of Lithgow. And the good news is that it also boosts the chances of survival for the endangered Macquarie perch that they coexist with in that waterway. New South Wales DPI Fisheries Manager Luke Pearce is part of the team tasked with the recovery of the Macquarie perch in New South Wales. Luke, how did the weekend go?
Scott, it was fantastic. Had great weather conditions, which is unusual for this time of year up there. And, we had about 15 wreck anglers join us there, mate, and they caught over 160 trout. And we caught collected over 500 trout for the weekend that have all been relocated and given new home at the mill ponds in Portland. And some really impressive specimens as well. You know, lots of large brown trout, you know, well in excess of 50, some even bigger than 60 centimetres in length. So, you know, these are cracking fish, mate. Fish of a lifetime for someone to now catch out of the mill ponds over at Portland.
And how did they transport, Luke? It was all good. I mean, weather quite cool. That'd help, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no trouble at all with the transportation. They were all fine. Obviously, we've got, you know, specialised tanks to carry them in that are all plumbed up with oxygen and stuff. But, yeah, we didn't lose any fish. The fish all transported fine and released and swam away happily over at the mill ponds and are ready to go again, mate. So, yeah, it was a great weekend. You know, lots of really passionate anglers there, you know, super supportive of what we're doing, you know, really excited to be involved in the project and really excited to, you know, the prospect of Macquarie perch, you know, recovering and being back in that catchment again where they've been, you know, missing for so long. And we actually managed to catch also about 8 Macquarie perch over the weekend. And for many of the people there, this was the first time that they'd ever seen one, you know. So, you know, they were really excited about that. And these were beautiful little specimens, mate. You know, they're only 2 and 3 years old, these fish. But, you know, some of them are up over 200 mils long now. So that was a real added bonus for these guys. They got to come and catch some trout and help out some Macquarie perch, but also got to see some as well. So that was fantastic.
And did they live up to expectations? And they seemed very dark. Is that the coloration they often take on it in clear water, or is it a spawning coloration? They seemed beautiful, sort of almost a marbly blue.
Yeah, they can vary a lot in color, like most fish, I guess. But often they are really dark, like that really dark black. When you know, particularly in those clear waters and that clear water environment, they take on that really dark colour. And particularly at that size, you know, when they're sort of in that, you know, sub-adult stage, you know, sort of around that, you know, 15 to 20 centimetres, they can be really dark. Not always, but, yeah, often they'll be really dark, almost jet black like that. And often, you know, have a really bright sort of silver or white eye, which is, you know, what the old-timers used to call them, or some of them anyway, called them white eyes or goggle eyes. But, yeah, really impressive-looking fish, and they looked in really good condition. And it was really exciting to see them there. But, you know, I guess you know, the results from the weekend give us an indication of just how skewed the numbers are. You know, for the fishing effort that we did over there for 3 days, we got over 500 trout. We got 8 Macquarie perch. So whilst we're not trying to completely remove trout from the system, it's about, you know, tipping the balance and getting the scales back in the favour of Macquarie perch and allowing them to establish there. So you're reducing the numbers of trout for a period while that population re-establishes.
Yeah, and giving people a chance to catch and introduce fish, which is introduced to catch, in an accessible location. I think that's the win-win that you're talking about, isn't it? It also sort of says that they can coexist if you can keep whittling down the numbers and keep giving the people of Portland that wonderful sport. Some of the fish are really great. If you go to our ABC Big Fish podcast at your local ABC pages around New South Wales or on any of the podcast platforms, you'll see a photo of Matt Hansen from Ausfish Unlimited holding a whopping big trout, a really fat fish too. It's in very good nick.
No, some amazing fish. You know, they were lots of really big fish in really good condition. And, yeah, these guys had a great weekend, you know, catching those fish. And we're really excited to see them going somewhere where they can now be caught again by other anglers and get, you know, who'll get just as much enjoyment out of them as well. And the other really exciting thing was we had, you know, a couple of the kids there over the weekend who were helping us out, you know, with the collection, but also with the release at the other end. So, you know, Ray Tang from the Central Acclimatization Society, who I know you know, Scotty, he was there with his little kids and they released all these trout into the mill ponds over there at Portland. And to think that, you know, those kids can now go back there and catch those fish is just great. It's a great outcome for them. And they were really excited about that. So, you know, that I guess proves the worth in what we're doing.
Yeah, Ray's one of the best trout fly fishers I've ever met. He really has caught some trophy fish in the Central West and lives for it and loves it. And we're speaking with New South Wales Fisheries Manager Luke Pearce about the endangered Macquarie perch recovery, getting them back into the top end of the Macquarie. I mean, if they do start to breed, if they do grow to those proportions you're estimating, because they're in a good paddock, you see the size of the trout, how long can they live?
You know, things like rainbow trout in Australia, you're probably only looking at, you know, 3-4 years max, and brown trout a few more. But Macquarie perch, you know, in a good environment will live, you know, at least up until 25, 26 years old. So, you know, they're a long-lived fish and can persist there for a long time. And hopefully they will in this environment. You know, the conditions look ideal, other than the fact that, you know, there's a high abundance of trout there, which we're trying to do something about. But, yeah, it's beautiful, pristine environment, a protected catchment, incredible habitat, lots of beautiful, you know, snags and rocks and cobble and all the things that they need, and beautiful water quality. So, yeah, fingers crossed in the next few years we'll see some breeding. I guess that's the next milestone in the project. You know, we've got fish there and they're surviving, but, you know, I guess to really claim success for this project, we need to see those fish breeding and recruiting in the wild. And once they do that and we get established and they get established and we see a good population there, then we'll be really excited.
Yeah, and look, you picked the area for a reason. You've seen this breeding success and natural recruitment in the Retreat River. So there's not really any reason to suggest that this won't happen when they get to breeding size. And are they like trout? Do they just get bigger and bigger to suit their environment? Because you can catch little trout up in the high country in the peaty streams or in the Scottish Highlands where their native habitat is, that can be mature and sexually mature fish at 10 inches long, 8 inches long, and then you can catch those same brown trout in Terra del Fuego that are 28 pound. Is it similar for native fish in some respect, that they'll stunt but still be sexually mature, or that's not the case with mackers?
No, absolutely. Absolutely, Scott. And we actually see that with one of our other populations. So we actually have a translocated population of Macquarie perch in Cataract Dam, which is just outside of Wollongong, and is in this part of Sydney's water supply. And there's actually a really well-established, strong population of Macquarie perch in that particular impoundment. And they are all really stunted in there. There's such high abundances and in high numbers that they are, you know, all really small compared to what they would be elsewhere, because there's just too many mouths to feed and they don't have an... It's not about the size of the environment in that aspect. It's more about food, resource and availability. So we did a big study on those, on that population, and we found that, you know, fish that were only, you know, 15, 20 centimetres long were sexually mature and were like 6 or 7 years old, whereas they should be, you know, 30, 35 centimetres long by that stage and much larger. And we took them from Cataract Dam and put them in some of our ponds at our hatchery at Naranda and gave them lots of tucker and they grew really quickly and put on a lot of size and condition. So there's obviously some food resource availabilities in that system that's causing stunting in that particular population. And so we don't think that we'll see that in this population in the Upper Macquarie system in Windmandale because certainly at this point in time there's not many in there. So, but you know, if they breed up in really large numbers, then potentially that could happen down the track. And if it does, you know, that from our perspective, that'd be a really great problem to have because that gives us, you know, fish that we can potentially take and relocate and elsewhere and establish additional populations.
All you've got to do is throw them over the wall and they're into their native Macquarie River catchment range.
Yeah, that's right. But I guess one of the other things to point out, you know, and one of the reasons why we've chosen Windmandale and that particular dam and that particular stream, not just the pristine environment and the really fantastic habitat, it's also one of the few places, particularly in the Macquarie catchment, that still remain free from redfin and carp. So redfin perch, enemy number one for Macquarie perch, and you know we all know the damage and impacts that carp have on our waterways and native fish as well. So you know, getting them established in there will be fantastic, but you know it'll be more difficult elsewhere and more broadly across the system because not only do we have trout to compete with, you've got those other introduced pest species as well.
Maybe they'll push those introduced ones out.
Yeah, that's certainly something that we all wish for, Scotty. If we can get, you know, enough native fish back in the system, then hopefully at some point in the future, you know, they can compete or out-compete with some of these pest fish species as well. But I think that will require some intervention from us and others as well to try and reduce the numbers of those alien species. But, you know, that's certainly something that's doable, I think.
All right. Well, anyway, we can slowly work on it and also keep them alive. You know, this is all about keeping the genetic stocks healthy and letting them do what they do and live in the wild because that's where you get the most robust stock, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we need to have these, you know, I guess, you know, this is doing two things for us. You know, it's establishing an additional population. So we've got, you know, I guess a backup or, you know, another population in the wild if we lose some of our other populations, but it also, you know, is allowing us to maintain some genetics and genetic diversity within those populations as well. So we're taking genetics from other populations and creating a mixed genetic strain within this system. And that will be obviously a lot more robust and have a lot more adaptability and hopefully, you know, create a stronger strain of Macquarie perch that will be more successful into the future.
Yep, no, it's all very, very positive. So good work to all involved. And did Matt catch that really big one? I mean, it doesn't matter who catches them as long as they're caught and relocated. But that was just a fantastic photo. If people go to our big fish sites around New South Wales there and maybe at in the Central West at Orange or Dubbo, they'll be able to see that online at the Big Fish podcast. But that was a trophy size fish.
Yeah, it sure was, mate. He did definitely caught that and many others like it. And I don't think that was the biggest one either. I can't remember. Recall exactly how big the largest fish was, but there was plenty, you know, up around that 60 centimetre mark.
Wow, so yeah, they're good fish.
They're great fish.
Yeah, they're in good nick too, so that augurs well for the Macquarie perch to grow to sort of 6 pound and breed and be as fat and fit and healthy. And what about Ray Tang on the fly rod? He's a pretty good wielder of the long wand, as you are, Luke Pearce. Did he tangle with a few on the fly rod?
Ray didn't actually fish, mate. He was mostly assisting with the release of the fish rather than the actual capture this time.
So, wow, he's a dedicated man. He just loves his fly fishing, so that shows what a conservationist he is. What about you? Did you wield the long wand?
No, I didn't, Scotty. I was too busy electro fishing, mate. I had much more effective methods this time around.
Fair enough. I did see one with a fly rod next to it before it was put in the tanker to go to Portland. Who was catching him on fly?
That was a young fella from Bathurst by the name of Dusty Squibb. And so, yeah, he's a new convert to fly fishing, mate, and he actually caught that fish on a fly he tied himself and, a fly rod that he got at the Sofala Carp Muster as one of the, I think, the prizes or one of the raffles at the Sofala Carp Muster. So, yeah, he's a recent convert to the art of fly fishing, and that's one of his first trout on the fly, I think. So,
wow.
He was wrapped with that, which was great. You know, he's only a young bloke. I think he's 16 or 17. And, super keen young fisherman. And, he was really stoked to catch that fish. So that was really great.
Ah, that's a good story. Well done, Dusty. Luke Pearce, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scotty.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.